Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford of the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State writer. Logan, man, we're just getting our feet back on the ground here, folks, for another edition of Double Coverage, this podcast, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. And Logan, we've been out and about and around the Southeast and away from home, and it's kind of good to be back, isn't it?
It really is, and to sleep in my own bed, because the first the days leading up until Christmas, I was out of town. I had to go down to Jackson to cover a basketball game, and ended up staying down there. And then, of course, went to my parents' house for the Christmas holiday. And Christmas night, I headed out to Atlanta, spent the night there, and then spent the rest of the week up until New Year's in Charlotte. So it's good to be reunited with my own bed for a change.
Well, I was away from the bed for about 8 nights, so it was good to get back. Now, we always go down to my family in Denham Springs, Baton Rouge area of Louisiana before Christmas, the week before. So when we were there, we actually made a run down to New Orleans to go to the World War II Museum. So I was down there then, and then down there for the Sugar Bowl. So kind of good to get back and get into a routine. But really, routine is not exactly where we are right now. It's kind of a lot of news happening these days, and we're going to talk about that. A lot of people going pro. Logan and I, we're going to return to the Daily Journal for unfinished business. You know, we're still a part of the Journal. But a lot of guys are leaving at Mississippi State and Ole Miss. A lot of basketball kind of shifting gears. The Rebels opening their new arena, the long-awaited Pavilion at Ole Miss, opens tonight, as a matter of fact. It's an 8 o'clock tip against Alabama. We'll talk about that in the program. And later on, we're going to hear from Mike Dettillier, a New Orleans-based NFL draft analyst, and we'll hear what he has to say about the Ole Miss underclassmen. He's got them ranked pretty highly. He'll talk about that later on in the program. But Logan, first, man, let's talk about Mississippi State. They have just as many guys who are declaring for the draft right now, too. I think it's 3 from both schools. Is that right?
That is correct. As of yesterday, Boniquis Brown, the Mississippi State junior linebacker, became the third underclassman to declare from Mississippi State, joining wide receiver Darunya Wilson and a guy from our coverage area up there around Houston and defensive tackle Chris Jones. So 3 underclassmen leaving and a lot of coaches leaving from Mississippi State. So it's been a lot of turnover here just since I've gotten back from Charlotte. So it's been a busy time, and you know, a lot of hires and a lot of players that Dan Mullen has to replace heading into the spring.
Well, let's talk about Manny Diaz, the defensive coordinator, first, and then we'll come back with the guys who have declared for the draft, and we're going to get to Ole Miss as well. But was it a surprise to see Diaz leave after one season back in Starkville?
In a way, it was, and in a way, it wasn't. Obviously, if you follow Manny Diaz's track record, you know he's one of those coaches that moves a lot. He keeps those moving trucks close to his house. He doesn't really stay any one particular place very long. Of course, his last stint in Starkville in the last 2 years as well. But what was surprising about it is when he returned last year, he made the statement that this was the last defense coordinator job he ever intended to take. He expected to move on to a head coaching position after he left Mississippi State the second time. And obviously it's a chance for him to return home. He's a Miami native. His father actually was the mayor of Miami for a while. So he gets a chance to return home and coach under Mark Richt. And I think that's what the drawing point was. I don't think he ever foresaw that actually opening up, but you can't blame the guy for wanting to return home. It's probably a once in a lifetime opportunity for him to do that. And, you know, but like I said, I really think when he made that statement a year ago, he actually meant it. I don't think he intended to leave Mississippi State. But like I said, the opportunity to return home and coach in his hometown is a, you know, opportunity of a lifetime. And he also took Ephraim Banda with him. He actually was the interim safeties coach for Mississippi State. He was the guy that filled in those first practices under when Tony Hughes left to take the Jackson State job. Ephraim Banda stepped in, and he was Mississippi State's defensive quality control coach this past season, and he joins the Miami staff as a safeties coach. So, you know, Mississippi State can't promote from within to fill that vacancy at safety. So they're going to have to look elsewhere to try to do that. And that's one of the many hires that Dan Mullen has to make.
Well, what about Phil and Diaz, a coordinator? What's that looking like?
Well, it's actually a name that I've heard floating around as a guy that you're familiar with, Parrish, and that's Tom Allen, who recently left Ole Miss. He spent this past season at University of South Florida. That's one of the names that I've heard tossed around, and a name that I've heard tossed around for the safeties job is Terrell Buckley, who's a Mississippi native. He grew up in Pascagoula, of course, played many years in the NFL, won a Super Bowl, and he's been at Louisville the last couple of years. And I've heard that he actually interviewed on Wednesday for that position. So I think that would be a great hire for Mississippi State. It would give them another Super Bowl champion back there coaching the secondary, joining Deshae Townsend back there. I think that would be a great hire, especially with his Mississippi ties. And Mississippi's kind of still been his recruiting area, obviously, with him still being, obviously from here. So, a lot going on here. Mississippi State just recently, as of just a few minutes ago, right before we came on the air to record this podcast, Mississippi State finally hired a strength coach, and that's Nick Savage. They actually promoted from within. He actually took over for Rick Court during the bowl practices. He kind of assumed the interim strength coach position, and obviously that interim was taken off just a few moments ago by Dan Mullen. So at least one hire has been done, and announced earlier this morning, Sleepy Robinson, Mississippi State's former quarterback, who's been the recruiting coordinator. He's following Tony Hughes down to Jackson State. So a lot of staff changes here, and it's I had to actually write all that down just to keep up with everything.
There is a lot of movement going on there. Is Tom Allen the only name you're hearing for defensive coordinator? I had heard that. I didn't know if there were some others in the mix or not, or if it looks like it's going to be.
I'm sure there are. I mean, it's really they're playing it close to the vest, and obviously there's a lot of different routes that he could go. He could just hire a linebackers coach and promote either Deshae Townsend or David Turner to defense coordinator. I mean, there's a lot of things he could do. He could hire a safeties coach that could be a defense coordinator. There's a lot of different moves that Dan Mullen can make with this. And like I said, with so many vacancies open, it's really hard to see which direction he's going in at this time. So right now it's still up in the air. I do expect it to be a quick hire, though. Obviously, Mississippi State next weekend has their first official visits, and I think Dan Mullen leaves Sunday headed to the coaches' convention, and I expect him to probably make a hire while he's either on that trip or soon after he comes back from that. But I do expect him to have most of these coaching vacancies filled by the time they take official visits next weekend.
Well, when I heard that Manny Diaz was leaving and saw where he was going, the first thing I thought about was this is a guy going home. This is not it might be a strange move if Diaz was going somewhere else. But I can see the connection there. Hey, folks, you're listening to Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. We want to remind you about our news podcast as well, The Memo. Be sure to check that out wherever you go to search for your podcast. Join Brad Locke and Derek Russell for all things Northeast Mississippi. Lots of good stuff there with The Memo. Talking Ole Miss right now, with all of the staff changes going on right now at Mississippi State, Logan, it's pretty stable. It doesn't appear to be a lot of change. You know, sometimes when it looks like there's no change, then there's something right around the corner. But that would be a surprise with this Ole Miss staff right now. In fact, late on Wednesday, it was announced that Hugh Freeze's contract has been extended. No surprise. We knew he would get a bump in pay. But the big thing there is that they have increased the pool from which he pays his assistants by more than $1 million. So a lot more money that Freeze can use to pay his assistant coaches, and Freeze himself has gotten a raise to not $5 million a year. The way they're spending this is almost $5 million, $4.9 million and a little change. That's what Freeze will average if he works the 4 years of this current contract. Freeze made $4.3 million this season after signing an extension in December of 2014. And as of January 1, 2016, so hours before the Sugar Bowl, Freeze's salary increased to $4.7 million for the coming season. And, of course, there are a lot of incentives in there as well based on academic progress rate, which we know as APR, and then bowl games, an SEC championship game appearance, other things, lots of incentives in the contract as well. But his base salary for 2016 will be $4.7 million, and then there are $150,000 increases built into the contract for the next 4 years. So Hugh Freeze looks like he is settled in right now at Ole Miss, as much as coaches can be settled in anywhere in college football, I guess. There's always you know, an opportunity around the corner if you keep winning. But Freeze has certainly brought some stability to the program that was lacking in a big way when he arrived following the 2011 season. Logan, let's talk some more about these guys who have declared for the draft. We'll start with Ole Miss. No big surprise, okay? Even with the Ole Miss fans chanting one more year to Laramie Tunsil and Laquon Treadwell as they were celebrating with their teammates on the floor of the Superdome. After a 48-20 win over Oklahoma State in the Sugar Bowl, even with all that, it was, I think, a foregone conclusion that both of these guys would declare for the draft. Robert Kimdichie, of course, had already declared for the draft. He was suspended for the Sugar Bowl after the Atlanta incident, the broken window, the fall from 15 feet, and then ultimately an arrest on a misdemeanor marijuana possession charge. You know, all that made Kimdichie available to go ahead and declare. He just removed the drama. He wasn't going to play in the Sugar Bowl anyway. You know, Tunsil, we really didn't speak to until after the game. Tunsil's comments after the game were his first since he was declared eligible to play in the Rebels' last five regular season games and the bowl game. He served a seven-game NCAA suspension. But Treadwell, during the week, you know, had made all of the right comments. I haven't made a decision. I'm going to talk about it with family and things like that. I think Treadwell really did give it some thought, Logan. I never thought he was going to come back. I mean, guys who are projected as highly as they are, there's just not a lot to gain by coming back. And there's an awful lot to risk in terms of injury. And certainly no one would be more aware of that than Laquon Treadwell, who sustained those really terrible injuries with a broken leg and dislocated ankle after, you know, late in the Auburn game in 2014 in early November. No one was going to be more aware of the possibility of injury than Treadwell. So these guys are all declaring for the draft, and right now, you know, every projection I've seen has them jumping off the board early. I lean on Mike Dettillier a lot for this sort of thing. He's been doing it a long time and has always been a great sharer of his time and resources when we would call him to talk about different players. And you're going to hear from him later on in the program. Dettillier has them ranked number one with Laramie Tunsil, number nine with Treadwell, and number 11 with Kimdichie. When you're rated that highly in the draft, you know, that you just go on and go. But that's the story on the three Ole Miss juniors. Logan, there was some talk, there was some wonder if Chad Kelly might declare. He has not. He is not expected to. Now, players do have until January 18th to make that decision. Tight end Evan Ingram and defensive end Fadal Brown both sought some draft grades and advice from the NFL. And to this point, neither have declared. I don't expect that Fadal Brown will, although it's only Ingram of those two who has made a statement saying that he definitely is returning. I look for both of those guys to come back. Tell us a little bit about the three again who have declared from state, Logan. And is this, you know, did you see this coming?
For two of them, you could kind of see it coming. Darrenia Wilson and Chris Jones, obviously, were the two with the biggest question marks surrounding them. Yeah, those were guys that you knew would be taken, not necessarily as early as the Ole Miss guys that were just going to be a surefire first round selection. Looking at what CBS Sports had, both Chris Jones and Darunia Wilson rated. They have Chris Jones coming off the board in the second round. He's a seventh rated defensive tackle in the draft, and then Darunia Wilson coming off in the third round. He's the 11th rated wide receiver in the draft. Darunia Wilson was the first one to declare. I think he declared 2 days after the Belk Bowl, and it was something you kind of expected with him. Just the fact, some of his personal situations. He has two kids, so you really can't blame a guy for wanting to support his growing family. So you could kind of tell that the NFL was probably going to be in his future all season long. Of course, he said all season when he was asked about it, that'd be a decision he would make at a later time. He would wait till after this season to make that decision. And of course, 2 days after the season, he does make that decision. But Chris Jones is a guy that obviously he still hasn't reached his peak yet. I mean, he's still pretty raw. He was raw coming into Mississippi State. He's improved a whole lot since he's been here. I think he probably could have bettered his stock a little bit with another season. I mean, this past season was really his first time as a full-time starter for Mississippi State, and really played his best football probably the last 3-4 games of the season. He really took that next step, and I think he could have possibly been a first-round selection had he come back for another year. But hey, that second round money is nothing to play with. That's probably more than you and I will ever see in our whole life, Ferris. The money he's probably going to make in April when he signs. And obviously, it gets him 1 year closer to that second contract can go with. And kind of the head scratcher of all this is Boniquez Brown, the linebacker that declared on Wednesday. Just really don't understand why, he decided to do that. I mean, he's a guy that, possibly with a good combine showing or a good pro day could, improve his chances, but I just don't see him being a first or second day pick. I mean, I think he's probably going to go somewhere in that third day, and there's a possibility that he may not even get drafted at all. So I don't know where, he got his advice. He was one of those guys that did seek a draft grade, but I kind of heard through the grapevine that he was the most adamant out of all the Mississippi State juniors about going pro. And, he's kind of undersized. He's about 6'1", about 230 pounds. There's really just nothing that just flies off the board that says that, hey, he's a surefire NFL guy. I mean, I don't know that he would have a whole lot to gain by coming back for his senior year, but I know it hurts Mississippi State's defense not to have him coming back because he would have been their most experienced player coming back. He's been a starter for 2+ seasons for Mississippi State, the second leading tackler on the team this year. I think he had 99 tackles and obviously had a huge play during the season blocking that field goal at Arkansas to win that game for Mississippi State. He's obviously a smart player. He's been a solid player throughout his career for Mississippi State, but just nothing spectacular like a Benardrick McKinney was last year, who came out as a linebacker a year early. I think he went in the second round and had a really good rookie year in the NFL with the Houston Texans. I just don't see that same type of talent from Boniquez Brown. I really think he's making a mistake, but like I said, it's his mistake to make. And I think he may, if he catches on with the right team, he could have a solid pro career, but I think it's a bit of a gamble.
Well, there are any number of reasons that these guys make a decision to leave in any sport. And lots of times when you and I look at it, you think, man, that's wrong. You're messing up. Don't do it. And lots of times we're right. I can think back to Ole Miss cases with Rufus French and Jevin Snead. And you look at these guys and think, man, this is not the time. But something gets in their head and maybe they get some bad advice. Some guys just need a change of scenery or want something different or believe that for whatever reason that this is what is supposed to happen for them, that they were expected to go to leave college early when they got to college. Some of them have that in their minds that way. But lots of times we can look at these guys, question a decision, and think, man, this is not the right time. And unfortunately, it would turn out playing that way. So maybe that's not the case with Boniquez Brown. We'll see. Shifting gears, talking a little basketball. The long-awaited Ole Miss Pavilion opens this evening. Tip-off is at 8 o'clock. The Rebels will take on Alabama. And Logan, it's going to be, man, I just don't know that. I think Andy Kennedy is going to have a tough task keeping his guys focused on Alabama and not just looking around at all the bells and whistles of the pavilion at Ole Miss. And they've been in there a little bit as a team, not much. They've had two practices in the new arena, and that's it. And it is nice. Now, you spend $96 million on something, it's going to be nice. And if you've had a chance to watch basketball at Auburn Arena, their new arena, which is several years old now, then you'll have a good idea of what to expect when you are inside the pavilion at Ole Miss for the first time. Lots of similarities. They borrowed heavily from Auburn Arena, and that's not a bad thing. It's a very nice building, and certainly long time in coming for Ole Miss, which is replacing Tad Smith Coliseum, which I think is 50 years old now. I heard Mark Fox, Logan, the Georgia coach, talking on the SEC Network after his Bulldogs defeated Missouri last night. They're at Ole Miss on Saturday night. It's a big opening weekend for the pavilion. They have the first game tonight against Alabama. They host Georgia on Saturday night, and they have a women's game Sunday afternoon, and they're actually going to serve brunch at 10:30. Tickets are available at Ole Miss Basketball at the website if you are interested in that. But they'll have that brunch there. They're going to have some different activities around just an opening weekend for the pavilion at Ole Miss. But Mark Fox was talking on the SEC Network, and they asked him a little bit about playing in the new arena for the first time, taking his guys over there to Oxford, Mississippi. And his response was, well, they used to have that squirrel that lived in the visitors' dressing room at the other place, so I guess we won't have to worry about that this year. So yeah, I don't think the squirrels have set into the pavilion quite yet. So anyway, a big weekend for Ole Miss basketball coming up. The Rebels really need to shoot better and see if they can rebound from a 21-point loss at Kentucky. A Kentucky team that is very good, but not as good as last year, as evidenced a couple of nights later when they lost handily to LSU in Baton Rouge. So anyway, we'll see what the Rebels can get done against Alabama tonight if they can get a win in the pavilion on opening night. Logan, the Bulldogs had a tough one against Texas A&M on Wednesday night. What happened there? What was your take on that game?
Well, the first thing just was, you know, Texas A&M came in ranked number 21 in the country and started out shooting terribly. I think they were hit three of their first 22 shots from the field, and Mississippi State took advantage a little bit, built a 9-point lead kind of midway through that first half, you know, just really didn't take full advantage of Texas A&M's poor shooting. And, you know, if you got a team that's ranked in the top 25, they're going to start hitting shots eventually. And that's kind of what Texas A&M did. I think they had five of their last six shots to end the half. Four of those five makes were all from 3-point range. So they pulled back into the game in a hurry and actually went into the half with the lead. Texas A&M battled back and started hitting shots, and it was kind of a back and forth ball game throughout the entire second half, just shot for shot. Every time Mississippi State would gain a little ground, Texas A&M would hit a dagger, and it was just one of those back and forth ball games. A really exciting game to watch from a fan's perspective, not necessarily from a writer's perspective trying to write on deadline. But you know, Texas A&M ends up winning that game 61-60. Quindary Weatherspoon from Mississippi State hit a 3-pointer at the buzzer, but Texas A&M went to the free throw line with 4 seconds left to go, buried both free throws. Mississippi State gets the ball back, dribbles down, and turns the ball over, gets another chance at the end of the game. That's actually what set up an inbounds play to Quindary Weatherspoon for the 3-pointer, but of course Texas A&M wasn't guarding him at all. I mean, they had a 4-point lead at that point. So who cares if Mississippi State hits a 3-pointer? Weatherspoon buries it at the buzzer, but too little too late for Mississippi State. Malik Newman down the stretch, had a chance at two free throws and missed both of them. You know, it's a freshman in that situation and just doesn't hit either one of them. And, you know, that's what you expect a five-star recruit, McDonald's All-American, to come in and hit some shots like that. It was kind of disappointing to see him not kind of rise to the occasion in that moment. But at the end of the day, he's still a freshman. It's his first SEC ball game. And you can kind of see that. But one cool moment that happened during that ball game, Rick Stansberry, the former Mississippi State coach, now an associate head coach at Texas A&M, it was his first chance to come back to Humphrey Coliseum since he left a few years ago and received a standing ovation before the game when he walked out to the court. They did a little ceremony recognizing him for all his accomplishments at Mississippi State. I think he was at Mississippi State for 22 years, the all-time wins leader at Mississippi State. Really cool moment for the fans at Mississippi State to stand up and applaud him for all that he did there. And he was pretty emotional before the game.
Now, I saw Rick and Mio on the floor. Were the boys there, too? Was everybody there?
I didn't see the boys. Like I said, I'm sure they're a lot older now than the last time I saw them. But there's
they're probably a little bigger than we remember.
Exactly. But Mio was out there with him. She was kind of tearing up out there. I think Rick was kind of tearing up a little bit, too. I really, knowing Rick Stansberry like I do, I don't think he I was kind of surprised he even agreed to do it. And I think he was probably apprehensive because, you know, he didn't leave under the best circumstances here. I think a lot of fans were angry at him when he left. But I think all that was forgiven last night. And I think he's glad that he decided. I think he felt a lot more welcome probably than he necessarily expected to be. I mean, it was a constant barrage of hugs and handshakes, even fans lining up behind Texas A&M's bench. Right before the game, during the national anthem and all that, just to try to say hello to Rick and his return to Starkville.
Well, it needs to be forgiven. Life is short, so move on. Hey, folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. We thank you for listening to this production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Remember to check out our news podcast, The Memo, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. Lots of good stuff there. Wherever you go to search for podcasts, it's there. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back with you next week. Be sure to hang around and check out that interview with Mike Dettillier, the New Orleans-based NFL draft analyst. It's coming up next. I'd like to share an interview now with you that I conducted with New Orleans-based NFL analyst Mike Dettillier earlier in the week. Mike's been doing this a long time. He takes a look at the draft at all players. And he has some really good things to say about the Ole Miss juniors. He has Laramie Tunsil rated number one, Laquan Treadwell rated number nine, and Robert Kimdichie rated number 11. He talks about those guys here and talks about Kimdichie's Atlanta incident and what that could cost him in the draft. Joined now by Mike Dettillier. Mike, I always define you as an NFL analyst. I know you have a lot of irons in the fire. I want to talk a little bit about how you have some Ole Miss players rated, but before we get there, tell us a little bit exactly what you do and how people can find you.
Well, I've been, you know, scouting college and pro players now. It's almost 30 years, so Parrish, I'm getting like you. I'm getting up in age doing this, but when you start seeing the grandsons of not only the sons, but the grandsons coming in, you know you've done it for a little while. And, yeah, I've been doing this for WWL Radio 870 in New Orleans and, you know, different ESPNs across the United States and, you know, for SaintsReport.com and BuyYourBengalsInsider.com for well over 20 years and enjoyed doing it, not only covering the high school, college, and also professional level evaluating talent and also the teams that they put out on the field.
Well, it's good work, and most recently I saw a list of your top 45 players that you have rated for the draft upcoming, and I'm looking at the three Ole Miss underclassmen who have declared, Laramie Tunsil, Laquan Treadwell, and Robert Kimdichie, and I'm seeing you have them listed at 1, 9, and 11 in that order, and wanted to talk to you about those guys for a little bit. And let's start with Kimdichie, who you have at number 11 right now. I guess the big question for Robert going into the draft is how does the broken window, the fall, the general unusualness of the Atlanta incident affect Robert in the draft?
Well, it don't help him. I can tell you that. I mean, it's a negative. You enter a situation here where, you know, listen, everybody makes mistakes. If you're 20 years old, 30, 50, 90. But you know what? You gotta own up to it. You gotta be a leader. And if you messed up, you know, you say you messed up. If you scared, you say you scared. So if you screw up in life, say you screwed up. That was a lot of spin, so to speak, on that. And I thought that was to his detriment. People around him didn't really look out for him. Listen, you got to fess up to what happened and deal with the consequences. I think if, from an NFL standpoint, I'd much rather a guy tell me the truth about what's happened. And you know what? We deal with it, and you deal with it afterwards. But it's an eternity between now and late April. It's a long time. And I can guarantee you somebody else is going to do something stupider than him. I mean, it's like being on the front page. You can't stay there forever. You're going to be put into page 10 or 12 or whatever down the line. Somebody else is going to mess up worse than you did. And how he handles it, I think, Parrish, I think is the most important thing. Because you know what? They had a young man that played at LSU, and Tyrann Mathieu. And I saw just what type of dominant player he was. Numerous issues off the field. Gets kicked off the football team, and he decides in November that he's not going to return to school and he's going to come out early. He ends up being a third-round pick, a pretty high one. So, you know, you look at that, and, you know, you look at Kim Dichie, and, you know, he was a guy considered a top-five pick. He's going to tumble a little bit. There are going to be some teams that are going to say, you know what, I'm not going to fool with him. But, you know what, talent overrides it a lot. And what I can't tell you is, if that's not another incident that happens between now and late April, he's still a top 15 pick. But there are question marks now. There are some big question marks about character, off-the-field issues. And my thing about it is, and I always say this, understanding that you had, you know, an opportunity to showcase yourself in the biggest bowl game Ole Miss has played, you know, in over 20 years, so to speak, and knowing you were going to come out early and knowing they were going to test you at the combine, why would you put yourself in this spot? You know, you got to understand the moment. And like I said, we all make mistakes, but you got to understand the moment that you're in. And so how he handles it between now and April, I think, will be imperative on where he gets picked. But talent-wise, no question, he's a top five or six pick. But I think because of the incident, he's going to tumble a little bit. How far he tumbles is in question. And all of that has to do with how he handles this. But you know what? The NFL is going to know your story. You got to fess up. You got to tell them the truth, because they're going to know what happened to you.
Without the incident, where would you have him rated at the moment?
Without the incident, he's a top five pick.
Yeah,
he would have probably been either five or six on my list. I mean, Ole Miss would have had three players in my top 10. I mean, that's how good of a player he is. Now, he's a defensive tackle in the NFL, but he's tailor-made for the NFL today in this hybrid-type system that you see. He could play defensive end, but really he's better off, you know, playing that inside position where he's up athletically against a guard. Man, he's going to whip the stew out of those cats. He's that good of a player. But, again, you know, character does matter. It does matter for these teams. When you're paying that kind of money for a player, it does matter. But we all know one thing. We've been doing this long enough. Talent sometimes overrides character. And you know what? You're not running for president or the Senate. It just takes one team to pick you. You don't need majority, just one.
Well, in terms in today's landscape of NFL salaries and whatnot, what does a slide of 5 picks or 10 picks mean to him in terms of dollars?
Millions, plural.
Mm-hmm.
Plural. So, I mean, it did have a significant impact on him. You slide from 4 to 12 or 4 to 11, you're talking about, you know, millions of dollars. And now, because of the salary cap situation, because the way the new CBA is, it's not like it was in years past, but, you know, it's still significant financially for him. But, it's really shameful because, you know, he really did play well this year. I thought he had an outstanding season for Ole Miss. We all know about the incident with also his brother. And so, you know, all these red flags now are starting to go up the pole. And, man, if you think you've got heat on you now, you really going to have heat on you. Because when these interviews start, how you handle it is going to be, I think, a big part on where he gets selected.
Well, I see you have Laramie Tunsil at number one, and on a much, much smaller scale, Tunsil does have a little bit of an issue there with the NCAA investigation. I don't think that matters much, but what I took out of that was when Ole Miss came back with its own release and said that Laramie Tunsil was, quote, found to be not forthcoming in his questioning by the NCAA. Does that possibly affect him in the draft? Obviously, you don't think so at this point.
No. Man, listen, if they start investigating all these top players, Parrish, we couldn't field a punt team. I mean, come on. I mean,
yeah.
You know, like, he's the first guy that maybe got help from a booster or an alumni. Come on, that, you know, and I understand, you know, him trying to cover that up. You know, you're trying to do what's best for you and your family, but in this spot, you know, you see all these coaches making these multi-million dollars and the school making all this money. And, you know, you got your education paid. But, you know, I mean, almost, you know, we live in a different world of, you know, where's mine on this? And so
right.
You kind of understand that part a lot more than putting yourself in a situation like what Kenducci did. So I think it's a minor. I think it's a minor issue on kind of what happened with Laramie. Now, from an athletic standpoint, there are a few guys like him. Now, he's a big man who can move his feet. He's got great hand placement as a pass protector. And, man, you know, he's going to play left tackle. And he's a power driver as a run blocker, does a nice job in that area. He still has some ceiling that he, you know, some potential there that he can grow into. And all I know, if I'm the Titans, is priority for me. I got to protect my star player. And I got one of them on offense, and that's Marcus Mariota. And so, you know, I'm picking him because, you know, like Michael Orr, you know, he's blindside. He's protecting my blindside of that quarterback. And I just look at what's happened with Tennessee's quarterbacks and how they've got knocked around pretty good. Yeah, I would put that high on the list. And he's my highest rated player. And he's just not a lot of flaws in his game. But, man, he is tremendously athletic. And the ability to move his feet and his arms and just everything from a pass blocking standpoint. And he's also a really good run blocker. So, yeah, he's my top ranked guy. And I'd be shocked if the Titans didn't pick him with the first pick.
I have been so impressed with what Tunsil has accomplished and has helped Ole Miss accomplish since coming back into the lineup. Are there other offensive linemen who are close to him? Is he that far ahead of the others in this draft?
Well, Ronnie Stanley is my number two guy, and that's a little gap there between the both of them. They're similar builds. I just think that Laramie's a little bit more athletic than what Stanley is, but you know that's a little difference between the two of them. Two both really good players. Two guys I think will go in the top 10, but you know, with Ronnie, I think maybe some people think maybe he's better on the right side than the left. And in this world, the way that hybrid type systems are in the NFL, you're catching it from both angles. But both really good players, both top 10 players. I give Tunsil the edge because of his athletic skills and his ability to steer a defender to the outer edges. And you saw he made a difference when he hit back in that lineup. He was quite a stud player. And he's done this now for 3 years. What people forget is he started as a true freshman at Ole Miss. And there ain't a lot of guys that can walk off of a high school campus and hit what I call, or Les Miles will call it, big boy football. And he wasn't good. He was dominant. And not a lot of guys can say that. I mean, walking off of a high school campus and you starting as a true freshman, that's a great accomplishment.
Yeah, from the beginning. Were you surprised by what Laquon Treadwell was able to accomplish this season, coming back from some pretty bad injuries?
You know, that injury was horrific, and when you watched, you know, him go down. But, you know, boy, modern medicine has come a long way. And, you know, you just can't measure somebody's spirit. And, you know, he worked really hard to get himself back in shape. And, you know, I'll be honest, Parrish, I'm not sure he doesn't look a little faster today than we did before the injury. And sometimes with athletes, yeah. you know, you hit a maturity level that athletically your body and everything comes together. Who he reminds me a lot of, and I've told this to so many people, he reminds me of Torrey Holt coming out of North Carolina State. And Torrey's going to end up in the NFL Hall of Fame. He had a great career with the St. Louis Rams. And smooth, not the big, lengthy receiver like you see a lot in the NFL, but real smooth, good route runner, tremendous after the catch. He's not what I would call a sprinter. He's not a 4.3 guy, but he can run after the catch. And that's all the guys catching him, you know, when he got pads and a helmet on. That's the difference between being a track guy and a football guy. So I'm so impressed with him, his character, his work ethic, his attention to detail. But out on the field, he has been an attention getter since he came to Ole Miss. And again, like Tunsil and Kenducci, from day one, he's had a lot of attention and he's produced at a very, very high level. Because if I'm playing Ole Miss, you know, one of the things I know, they spread you out and they have different receivers. But, you know, he's the guy that I pay the most attention to, and just look at his numbers. You know they're going to get him the football, but you can't stop it. And that's the most impressive part. You saw in the bowl game, same sort of situation. Oklahoma State was bracketing, coveraging him. They were doing different things to try to stop him. They just couldn't. He's at a different level as a wide receiver. And he's one of two receivers I have rated in my top 15. I think Will Fuller from Notre Dame also, I think, will be. And it's just funny how the two top tackles are Ole Miss and, you know, and Notre Dame with Stanley. And the two top receivers of mine are Treadwell and Fuller. Ole Miss, Notre Dame. So let's go to show you great recruiting class. But Laquan, first-class young man, and I'd be shocked if he got out of the top 10. And in the world today, the way they throw the football and his skill set, he's tailor-made for the NFL.
Well, what do these guys need to show to NFL executives at the combine?
Well, one, for Laquan, I think he's going to go through a physical like he's never been through before. And so they're going to want to check out the injury that happened against Auburn in 2014. And, you know, they you can see as a route runner, he's real sharp doing that, and he catches the ball extremely well. I think how well he runs will have some effect on him. But and, again, we're not talking about a guy that's going to blaze out there in a 4.3 speed, but you don't want to see how well he can run on the track. That's certainly something. It doesn't tell you a damn thing about if he can play, but I think the NFL would want to see him run a pretty good time. And I think 4.5 or under, a little under, I think is about what you're looking at. With Laquan, he runs that. Again, he assures himself that spot. With Tunsil, I think the two words I tell him to be real careful about is I'm full. Don't get too big. I mean, you yeah. are at a level where a big man can put on weight very quickly. And so, you know, keep that weight down. I mean, before all this incident happened with Lyle Collins, he had gotten his weight down from 330 to in the teens. He had a great workout at the combine, and he would have been a top 20 pick had it not been for the off-the-field incident, and, you know, that he had really no control of. That was sort of a lightning strike I've never seen before. So with Tunsil, I think everybody's would maybe want to take a look at how well he's kept himself in shape, his weight. I think that would be the big thing for me. With Kenducci, his honesty. You know, I know what type of athlete you are. You don't have to tell me. I can see it. He's going to have to convince NFL teams in these one-on-one interviews that, listen, what happened was what it was, you know, and I made a mistake and I've learned from it and I want to move on with it. It was a life-changing thing for me and I've got to move on. The spin part of it is what I think would get the NFL a little bit irritated, because I think that was major spin when it initially happened. So you just got to get his story straight. And just tell the truth, because you know what? They know what would happen. They got a pretty good idea of what happened. So I think all three are a little different. The injury part, speed part with Laquan, the weight part certainly with Tunsil and his workout regime. And with Kenducci, I think it all boils down to tell me the truth about what happened that night.
All right, you've got Emmanuel Ogbah at number 16 on your list right now, the Oklahoma State defensive end. I thought the Ole Miss offensive line, of course, when you say Ole Miss offensive line, everybody thinks Tunsil immediately, but they moved him around a lot. He lined up a lot against Fawn Cooper. What did you think of Cooper's job in that game, and, you know, where do you see him? Does he have an NFL possibility?
Yeah, no question about it. I think he's better on the right side than the left, though, you know, he could be a swing man in the NFL. I thought he did a really good job against Emmanuel. He got squat, so to speak, against against Ole Miss. He certainly wasn't a difference maker, and he has been. He's an ace pass rusher, but he's a speed quickness guy. And Ron got his hands on him, and once he locked it up, you know, he was kind of stuck in neutral. So I think he's a guy's a later round pick, probably in the fifth round that you're looking at. He's got athletic skills that you really like as a big man, can move his feet well, long arm. He's not as technically sound as Tunsil. He needs some work as far as his foot placement, hand placement, that sort of thing. I think he physically needs to get a little bit stronger in the upper body. But he's got a lot of skills, and he is really good from an athletic standpoint. So you're looking at him, I think the NFL would look at him more as maybe a developmental guy down the road. And I'm just taking a shot here now that I've got him ranked as a fifth-round pick. And I'm interested in how well he works out, because I think that could determine how quickly he comes off the board or not, and also the run. They start to have a run on offensive tackles, he could slide himself into the fourth round.
What do you think? Tell me a little bit about Ogbah. I see you have him rated pretty highly. Now, he was described to me during Sugar Bowl week as a high-character guy. We've talked a lot about character with Kimdichie's situation. He was a kid that was like a three-star recruit that has developed and has gotten stronger and better. Does while the character issue could possibly hurt a guy like Kimdichie, does it help? Does it really matter for a guy like Ogbah in this draft?
It helps him, and you're right about it. He was a middle range recruit, so to speak. He's a guy much more known for his speed and his quickness than his ability to fight off blockers at the point of attack. He's gotten much better at that. The one thing I see with him a little bit, he's got one or two moves. He's got to have, you know, more toys in the box to beat his man, because he's not going to physically overpower that guy. He's got to beat him with his speed and his quickness. But his character, and everyone I've spoke to, from his high school coaches to his college coaches to his teammates, they rave about him. And not only is he a guy that is a hard worker, he's a leader. He's a guy that in that locker room gets other guys to play harder. And so sometimes you kind of want to judge a guy on a one-game basis, that he was not a dominant player, certainly against Ole Miss. But if you watch the season with him, he's a difference maker. And that's kind of what pass rushers do. They kind of get in spurts. I think sometimes we get, you know, we see a guy like J.J. Watt, and you say, well, man, look, well, how come that somebody else can't do that? Well, they ain't J.J. Watt. Bottom line, they're not Watt. You see Khalil Mack and see what type of player he is. And, you know, not everybody has that type of talent. And I think the world of a man. I think he's a heck of a player. He did not have his best game, certainly against Ole Miss. But he's going to end up being a middle first-round pick for a couple reasons. One, his skill set. One, he can get off the edge and rush the quarterback. And his supply and demand. Man, listen, they need, you know, pass rushers in the absolute worst way. And that's why I think you're going to see a lot of these guys get peeled off the board in the top 15 picks. They want guys that can rush the quarterback or kind of power pack that inside interior. And so, you know, he's part of that group.
That was Mike Dettillier, a New Orleans-based NFL analyst. You can hear him in a lot of different venues, mostly on WWL Radio out of New Orleans.